from the crypt.
Hello, boils and ghouls. Welcome to a very special edition of Dads from the Crypt. I will be your host tonight. My name is Mondo, and tonight I am joined by Jason.
Hello.
How did I do, Jason?
Pretty good. Needs a little more oomph. Needs a little gravitas. Although, I mean, as we're going to discuss, being a host is a difficult job.
You know, I never realized how difficult it was to do a podcast. We started doing a podcast, and I mean, people still might think we suck. That's okay. I can live with that. But we're a lot better than we were on episode one.
That's why when people are like, oh, yeah, I'm going to start from the very beginning and listen to your whole show. I'm
like, start about episode 30 or so. We started getting our bearings about us.
All right, what are we doing tonight?
Tonight... we will be doing a special episode talking a movie that will be out on Shudder on April 19th, but right now you can catch it at your local theater. It is Late Night with the Devil.
Satan! Hail Satan!
If anybody's going to hail Satan, it's going to be me. Okay, but I'm going to need you to take back over. I'm going to need you to take back over as host now because I don't know what I'm doing from here.
No, yeah, so this is a movie just came out. We'll do a very brief plot synopsis. We're just going to talk about it. I'm still kind of unpacking it. I saw it about 24 hours ago.
Yeah, we'll probably get into some spoilery material,
Let's just do blanket spoilers right now. Oh, okay. I'll just say I liked it. I think you liked it a little bit more than me, I'm going to guess.
I loved it. I've so far called it my favorite movie of the year, and I don't know if anything is going to beat it yet, so...
Yeah, this will definitely be my top 10, maybe my top 5, we'll see. Cool. Probably my favorite movie of the year so far. It hasn't come out yet, but because I saw the sneak preview of it. So
can you tell us what it is?
Oh, yeah, Abigail.
Oh, cool. Abigail looks super cool.
It's super cool. Very they scary. Played the trailer in front of this. So it's the first time I saw the trailer since I saw the screening. They give away a lot of plot, but not the characters are what really make that movie. They don't give away much of the character stuff.
Yeah, I didn't feel like because I'm usually very anti-trailer. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like it gave away too much. I felt and dude, my brain is so bad nowadays. I already forgot like 90% of it. So
well, also now that I've seen the movie, I'm putting together the pieces that they show you in the trailer. But because it's kind of reverse engineering the movie. But I'll just say the characters are really, really good in that movie. That's awesome. The real.
I'm looking forward to that
part. So that's probably my guess is that, at least for now, from what I've seen, that's my favorite movie. But there's actually a lot of good movies out right now.
One thing I will say is the original trailer I saw for Late Night with the Devil almost showed nothing.
Yeah,
and I was very happy with that. Then the one that Shudder released recently, like a month ago, shows a lot. I've never seen that one. I just showed it. I was talking to my daughter about it earlier, and I showed it to her because she's was interested in it. And it showed a lot more than I remember the trailer I saw seeing or I saw showed. But yeah, we'll get into some spoilery territory, but we'll give you some warnings before we go hardcore into the spoilers.
I mean,
realistically, anything we say is going to be a little bit of a spoiler.
We've already given our basic opinion. I'll give it like a 7 or 8. I'm assuming you're what, like a.
I'm a 10 on this thing, dude. Yeah. I really am.
Now that we've already given our recommendation, let's just go full spoiler.
Okay.
Because there's no reason to dance around it.
So what this is basically about, it's about a late night talk show host who's competing with David Letterman, Johnny Carson.
Johnny Carson.
Yeah, Johnny Carson. Yeah, right. For viewers and for ratings. And he's kind of like, think of him as almost a Conan O'Brien to Letterman and to Leno for people that are around that era. Or I don't even know who it'd be now, to be honest with you. Like Craig Ferguson. I don't remember.
I don't know if he's still there. Like Jimmy Kimmel.
But anyhow, he's kind of the second tier show where and they kind of bring up that it's critically acclaimed, but it doesn't get the viewers that Johnny Carson does. So, long story, but they go through the beginnings of them going through. They go through his life and his career and show all these cool clippings and about the show. The movie's really shot like you're watching the show. You're watching an unedited version of the show.
You're watching a documentary.
And then they get into him having problems where his wife passed away from cancer, unfortunately. And then you see him come back on the show, and now the ratings plummet again. So what they're doing is they're doing this Halloween episode, and they're trying to use shock and awe tactics, almost Jerry Springer-like tactics to, they show them earlier using Jerry Springer-like tactics to try to get more viewers. And now they're trying to go even more and show, say, all right, like, so the late 70s was a prime time of the Satanic Panic. And they're really trying to prey on people's fears of that by having a woman come on the show with her adopted daughter now, Lily, who is claimed to be possessed by the demon Abraxas, who's also they refer to it as a devil throughout the whole thing. So things happen, and different things happen on the show that kind of allude to it being a real entity, and by the end we find out this demon is a real fucking demon in this person's body and was utilizing this and knew what was happening, utilized the girl as a vessel. And eventually you see the final story of Jack Del Roy, where he's almost reliving his life, but is showing all the fucked up things he did. And he basically, the fact he, spoilers at this point, guys, we've already been spoiling some stuff, but this is where I'm getting like really into spoiler territory. But they show how he basically sold his wife's soul sold her health in exchange for his fame, by making a deal with the devil, so to speak, where that's why she suddenly, unexpectedly, as I mentioned earlier, got the lung cancer.
Yeah. So I guess he was part of some secret society, that met like at some points.
They call it the Grove, which is a takeoff of Bohemian. Have you heard of Bohemian Grove?
I just saw it referred to in the IMDb. I feel like I've heard it before, but tell me more.
So Bohemian Grove was essentially just what this movie positions it to be, which is kind of a boys club where all these there's pictures of like George Bush and Obama talking to each other at this fucking place. I think so. Like, I mean, no slander. I think they're both. But a lot of very powerful people go there and do almost pagan rituals. And there's a lot of stories about it, about what they do there, but no one really knows for sure. There is, I remember one reporter was invited, but he really didn't believe it because he's like, if you're going to do fucked up shit, you wouldn't do it the time you invited me. You'd obviously stage it. There's also any fans of found footage horror out there, which I'm a big fan of, there's a great found footage movie called The Conspiracy, which dives into Bohemian Grove. And I'd recommend that. But real fast, so there's also a lot of really kind of fun or occult Easter eggs or references in this movie. It's kind of like the preacher you see at the satanic, the Church of Abraxas, basically. He's obviously, they even call him Xandor or something like that. He's a ripoff of Anton Xandor LaVey, or an homage to. And then the gentleman on the show who's a skeptic is an homage of James Randi, if you know who that is.
No, explain that one to me.
James Randi passed away recently, in the past few years. And what he would do is do literally what this guy does in the movie. He would tell anyone, I'll give you X amount of money if you can prove to me that you have psychic abilities or supernatural abilities. And he would go on talk shows and disprove these people and show how they did their parlor tricks. He was a little bit less condescending than the character on this, like much more he's much more beloved than the character on this. The character on this is hard to like because he's a dick.
I found his shtick very entertaining though.
Super entertaining. He needed to be over the top for it to work. And then they also do another little cool little trick is the intro song. I heard the intro song, I immediately gave the movie a 10 because the intro song is Forever My Queen by the band Pentagram. Pentagram was kind of the American version of Black Sabbath in the late 60s, early 70s. They still play today, I think. A great documentary about the front man and all his issues, Bobby Liebling, called Last Days Here. Highly recommend that documentary. But if you listen to that song and read the lyrics of that song, by the end, it fits in very heavily with the movie. And I thought that was a really, really great way to open it up with a band called Pentagram. and playing a song about basically, well, the song's really not about the devil, but it is about kind of the lyrics are, God, I forgot the fucking lyrics just went out of my head. I've listened to that song 1,000 times. Oh, it was, "You're going to be my queen. A king only knows what he needs." And like all kinds of stuff like that, where it's almost, in my opinion, the demon Abraxas taking his wife's soul, or Mini soul. Midi? Mini was her name, right?
Yeah. Now, is Abraxas a real entity? I guess I'm looking up.
It's, yes, supposed to be. Yes. Yeah. He's real. I don't know if he was in the actual Bible or if it was just, I know Aleister Crowley, mm-hmm, used to talk about Abraxas.
Yeah.
And I think that's where they probably got it from. So at this point, he's kind of considered to be a,
kind of like a paemon.
Yeah, I would say a demon.
Yeah.
I guess he was referred to in the Old Testament.
Yeah, I live somewhere in the neighborhood of where Aleister Crowley used to live.
Oh, no way. That's,
yeah. Like, well, he used to like do acid with all the guys from JPL, the Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena.
No shit.
And like invite him to his parties and stuff. So I don't know exactly where his houses were, but supposedly just not a few minutes from where I am.
I think, too, I can't remember, San Francisco used to be able to go to the original Church of Satan, which obviously the cult of Abraxas or whatever they call themselves is based off of. But to anybody out there who's not familiar with the Church of Satan, Anton Zandor LaVey, who started it, was basically a showman. I think he actually worked for the circus at one point. And he just realized that no one would read a book or buy into a philosophy if he said it's a philosophy of Jonathan White or whatever his name was. Mm-hmm. So he changed his name to Anton Zandor LaVey and called basically his book of philosophy, the Satanic Bible.
I mean, that's the same thing L. Ron Hubbard did.
Yeah. Except for, this guy. Well, you know what though? He was very open as to what it was. Like, he wasn't, yeah, well, he's like, we're going to do fake rituals and we're going to have orgies and we're going to have a good time and do drugs. Like,
well, insofar as like L. Ron Hubbard just wrote a sci-fi book that no one bought and then he decided to turn it into a religion. And then, yeah.
Did you ever hear how he was in the Navy? He attacked Mexico by accident.
Yeah.
Like, who the fuck? This is a fucking deity. The guy accidentally attacked Mexico. But also, no. In the Satanic Bible, and I only bring this up because, even though they reference Anton Zandor LaVey, he did not believe, he's an atheist. He didn't believe in, or maybe agnostic, but he did not believe in your traditional God and your traditional devil. He was a big believer in, we're kind of our own gods and you should do what makes you happy in life. But there's also like tenets in there. The satanic tenets are never harm an animal because man is the most cruel animal of all. Basically, don't touch someone if you don't have their consent. Hey, it all makes sense.
Right. Don't so, be dead.
Yeah, I used to consider myself kind of a LaVeyan Satanist, but I don't like being attached to that label because I do think a lot of the stuff he wrote was very, very smart and very, very a good, way to live. But I also don't want to be, I don't know, I just don't like being attached to any kind of religion, yeah, to be honest with you.
So bringing it back to the movie a bit. So what I love about this movie is that you're literally watching this telecast like in real time. Like, you don't skip ahead. You're watching as it goes. They basically emulate that like soft film grain that was popular, that like was what you've seen in the 70s. So like they said, they considered using real tube, whatever camera technology, but it was just been too hard to do with the effects. So they just had to fake it, but they do a really good job with like weird like motion blur and the effect, like the band. I love the bands. They were great.
The band is great. And Hank, the MC, he was, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah. Like all, they did a really good job because it's really just one room that they're doing this whole thing. It's all set in the soundstage.
No, there are flashes to other things, well, but yeah, it's done, but you don't, but it's not a whole, it doesn't, they look like they, like the satanic cult stuff, it looks like they filmed in someone's house. Like, it, yeah, wasn't like they built a whole soundstage for that.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is that they use the characters to really pull the story.
Yeah.
Because it's so well cast and so well acted. The lead, David Deschamel, probably mangled that. He's been,
yeah, you so mangled many- it. I can't remember how to, I can't pronounce it though.
You've been so many things, from The Dark Knight to Suicide Squad to Oppenheimer. It was just like this character actor that you just see him popping up everywhere. The Ant-Man movies. Just really, really talented guy. And you really feel for him. Even though it turns out he... Okay, we'll get into the ending in a moment. But I had a weird reaction a little bit, though. It took me a while. What really took me out of this movie, at least for a little bit, was, first of all, there were like 10 different studio logos. It was like almost comical.
Oh, at the very beginning?
Yeah.
I don't know if that was meant to be part of the movie or that was just what they had to do, because sometimes you'll see that with independent films when they get funny places and have to put them.
Yeah. But then the Shudder logo came up and did the dun 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 thing.
Oh yeah. So I think that was just an intro. I don't think it had anything to do with the rest of the movie.
Well, no. What I'm saying was I'm like conditioned to be sitting on my couch late at night watching something on my TV when that came up. So for like a moment, I was like, wait. Like my brain like got confused by that.
Oh, I gotcha.
Like I'm like, why am I watching Shudder on? Why am I paying $15 to watch Shudder on the big screen? And then he's going to Shudder, so everyone see it. And I'm not poo pooing spending money on good indie film or whatever, or small budget film. I'm happy to support that, but it was a weird cognitive thing because like, would I have experienced this movie differently if I was sitting at home versus sitting in a theater? I don't know, but it made me think about that for a little bit.
For me, like one of the reasons I love the theater experience, because I'm very scatterbrained sometimes at home, or I'll be at home watching a movie, then I'll look over at my laundry basket and be like, fuck, I forgot to do my laundry. when I'm in the movies, I can just get lost in the movie.
Yeah. There's nothing something for that.
Yeah.
But it was just a really kind of surreal moment, because it's the first time I've ever seen something with Shudder in the movie theater. With that logo. Yeah.
So I think maybe same here. I can't remember if I've seen anything. I tried to see Satanic Hispanics, but my theater canceled the screening after I got there.
I don't remember if there was a Shudder logo in front of that before, though.
I know it's on maybe just on Shudder. Yeah, maybe they didn't produce it. But yeah, I see what you're saying there. Other real cool things about this too is just to get out of the way too. Like before, because I know the film is getting some flack online about its usage of AI. They mentioned that, and the producers are very open about this. Like, look, in a few shots, they talked about it before there's ever controversy. They said, we had our artists basically make these designs, and then they used AI to make them more period accurate. So I have no problem if you draw something and you want to use AI to enhance it, I have no problem with that. Mm-hmm. I just don't want someone looking at your image, making it with AI and then not paying you. is more so what I'm saying. Or be it music or even, I don't know if you know this, but James Earl Jones, he signed a contract saying they can use his voice as AI, but they're paying him for it and he signed a contract and he agreed to it.
Yeah, I mean, AI is a tool. It's like that's just saying like, oh, you can't use Photoshop to, you know.
But when you're a band and you type in something to AI image generator and put that shit in your album, fuck you. That's just lazy.
Yeah.
Anyhow,
I saw that was a thing. I'm like, I don't really want to get pulled into that kind of drama right now.
I read about it just because I want to know more about it. And I read about it. I was like, oh, it's still not a big deal at all, in my opinion.
What this also kind of felt like was I love the VHS series because they allow people to try something that you wouldn't normally do in a big production.
Yeah.
Try like a different medium or try like a shtick. And it's a short film, so if it doesn't work, it's over with quickly. So this kind of almost had the feel of like experimental in that kind of way, or at least like picking something kind of vintage. A lot of the VHS films go with a vintage feel. Like there was that one in the last one where like someone was doing like a cyber presentation like from the 80s. It's like I think it was like 94. It's like video cameras and stuff.
It's looking almost like Lawnmower Man.
Yeah. Yeah. That wasn't the best segment, but at least it was an example of they're trying something. They're trying to emulate a thing.
Well, and I think it does a really good job of it because there are some movies that it stands out like a sore thumb when they're trying to emulate. I'm looking at you, Wonder Woman 84. Wonder Woman 84 seemed like a bunch of people who heard stories about the 80s and trying to make a movie based on who didn't live in the 80s because everything was way too colorful. But this movie seems like I can't promise this, but I feel like they did a lot of research into what shows looked like at the time, how they were filmed, how the aesthetics of it all. And I think it really shines through.
Yeah. So sometimes, and I've said this many times on the show, that sometimes I'm watching a short film or a short anthology segment, and I'm like, this would be great if it was a longer segment. You know, I said that this week with the werewolf episode segment in Creepshow. So I'm like, and that's kind of what I felt this is. This could have, the last 10 minutes of this could have been a short film, but they had but luckily they're able to make a whole movie around that. We're better for it.
Yeah. So the whole time in the movie, you're seeing basically, to start off with, it's a Halloween episode. He brings out a guy who's one of those, I forgot the guy's name, the guy who was really famous for doing this.
Chris Stu?
The person who actually does the, Chris Stu is the guy's name in the film.
Carmichael?
No, that's Carmichael Haig, who I wonder if it's a reference to Sid Haig. But no, but well, there's a real life person who used to do crossing over. I forgot the guy's name, but that's what he was doing. He was basically going through he would do the thing where I hear the word Ed.
Oh, and, the cold reads.
Yeah, the cold reads, which is a parlor trick. And then it's funny because you see the James Randi character, Carmichael, or is he Carmichael? I'm losing track of names here. But you see him later on questioning the women that he talked to that he supposedly was talking to their dead son about. And I'm very anti-psychic. For the sole purpose of the fact that they lie to people and give people either false hope or fake closure on things that they shouldn't be doing. But I think that was really interesting. But what I love though is we think this guy's a fake psychic. Then out of nowhere, he starts just freaking out. Mm-hmm. And then he's sitting between segments and he's blowing, his nose is bleeding. And then you see him, he goes to leave the stage, like, I have to go, and he falls down and does exorcist vomit everywhere.
Yeah.
And the whole time, fucking the James Randi character is like, this is bravo. This is a great parlor trick. And then they take him in the back and he ends up going to the hospital and he dies on the way to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then they bring out the doctor and Lily who they wrote the book Confession of the Devil about. And she is creepy as fuck. Let me just say that little girl actress knew the assignment, as the kids say.
Well, she's got those big eyes.
Yeah, but the way she looks at the camera, and it's kind of jarring in a way because, you know, accomplished actors and people on, they generally cut that stuff out of TV shows. If someone looks or talk shows, if someone stares at the camera, so you never see it. So when someone does it, it's kind of unsettling when it's not the host.
Right.
And the way they shot it was that they're shooting her obviously at an angle to get the side profile. Then she just turns the camera. It's like, why? So then they end up wanting to show her trick. Because the other thing about the James Randi character is he's offering $100,000 to any proof of the paranormal or supernatural. So, so she basically, the doctor hypnotizes her, but calls out the demon Abraxas, who's known as Mr. Wriggles, because he wriggles his way into your brain, which is definitely a homage Captain to The Exorcist. Yeah, Captain 100%. And then bad shit starts happening. Like her face changes like The Exorcist, and then her chair starts floating, but she keeps telling, and then she starts speaking in James Delroy's dead wife's voice, and she tells him, she goes, "We've met before, you know me. We met in the woods."
Yeah, the tall trees.
And later on, that comes into play where you actually see kind of part of that ritual where you can see where he basically gave up his wife's health in order to become famous. And in true Tales from the Crypt fashion, what happens? Well, he got his because his quest for fame was he is famous now, but he's dead.
Well,
or, we can talk. We don't know if he's dead, but
We can talk about the ending a little bit more. So, I am not sure how much. So basically, after shit goes down and like a bunch of people die, he goes like this like weird like mental mind trip, and he's being shown things. I'm not entirely sure how much of that was real and how much the devil is like trying to manipulate him.
I think it was manipulation because kind of like when he signs a contract, like, oh, now we own you, Jack. Jack, it was Jack, not James. Jack is a better name for a 70s talk show character. And so I think all of that was almost, think of it almost like a hallucinatory dream state where the moments are based off of the reality you experienced, but then embellished. And it was definitely the demon taking him through this story and fucking with him. And I kind of love that. And the scene towards the end where he's talking in bed with his wife, that was fucking crazy.
But then, so I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, did he know that he was signing away his wife's
Yes.
Because it sounded like he said he was doing some. When he's talking to her in the bed at the end and was kind of hallucinating, I felt like he said, like, I signed away something important. I didn't know it would be you.
Oh, yeah. Let me rephrase it. I don't think he knew it was going to be her until she died. I think he knew at that point what it was.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because I was trying to figure out.
I don't think he knew before that.
And at one point, they like imply the devil, or well, I'm calling the devil just because, that he had an affair with a doctor. Or did I read too much into that? Or was the devil just fucking with him?
I'm not 100% sure, to be honest with you. But I don't think it's that integral to the story. I think more so is just the fact that he knew he'd have to make a great sacrifice for this idea of fame. And in any kind of world, right, there's a question of morality there. Mm-hmm. If a demon comes to you, Jason, and goes, I'll give you everything you've ever wanted, riches, health, whatever, but you have to make a great sacrifice. And you ask him, well, what's that sacrifice going to be? And he said, you'll find out. If you say yes at that point, you're complicit in whatever happens.
I'm too paranoid to take that deal. The whole ending sequence was a real weird turn. Because I thought right before that was the end of the movie. And I was kind of, again, that last bit felt kind of like a VHS, like the climax of VHS segment. So I was like, okay, is this it? Is there going to be more? I was ready to be a little more disappointed if that didn't happen.
So I know people kind of complained about the ending because it's so different from the rest of the movie. So it can be a little bit jarring because you're watching this whole television broadcast and then suddenly now we're outside. We're not in that broadcast anymore. Mm-hmm. We're on a side mission here to see what happened. And then it wraps back up on the broadcast because his wife's in bed with cancer, and it's just painful. It's so painful to watch scenes like that because they play it so well and very, it's definitely not a beautiful or it's not a toned down version of cancer. Mm-hmm. What she's dealing with is horrendous. And she tells him, you know what to do, Jack. And she hands them the sacrificial dagger, which they had at the studio, which is from the Abraxas cult house. And, he stabs her, and then when he wakes up, comes out of the trance, he actually stabbed Lily.
Mm-hmm. Which, well, we think he did. We don't know if that's real or not.
Well, I think that was real. That's when we get back into the TV studio, because then you can hear police cars coming, and there's all this death and carnage around him. So I don't actually think Jack ever dies. I think his punishment is, guess what? You're famous now. You lost everybody you love, and now you're probably going to prison, motherfucker.
I mean, again, it's up to interpretation of whether that's real or not. But yeah, I can see that as the main one, but I can see other people arguing the other way.
Oh, and speaking of the cult, they also allude to like a David Koresh kind of Waco situation there, where the feds came to storm this compound and they had everyone fight back and then set it on fire with everybody in there. And only one person survived, and it was Lily.
Yeah. Well, there's that one point where they bring out the dagger for like a set dressing. And then he like picks it up, he's playing with it, and he puts it on the table between him and Lily. And I'm like, that's like Chekhov's gun.
Yes, I thought 100%. I'm like, this is definitely going bad places. But the fact they do that, but then don't really pay off on that right away.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it's pretty brilliant. And all the subsequent shots, when you see that dagger kind of in the background on that table, I'm like, when someone picks up the dagger, you know it's going to happen. So that's why that last shot of him stabbing the girl. Really pays off of that because you forgot about it by then.
And then Carmichael, when he is finally confronted with a demon. The demon basically goes apeshit inside the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking and first of all, anyone that didn't run right away is an idiot. Like the people that ran away are the smart ones. Stares right at Gus, and Gus's head turns around, breaks his neck.
Yeah.
And then he goes after, or the demon goes after Carmichael, the skeptic. And I love the fact that he gets on his knees and starts begging the demon and saying, I will worship you, Lord, Master, whatever demon, and then gets fucking incinerated from the inside out, which is a cool effect.
So speaking of Gus, I like that scene where they hypnotize him to think he's like got worms.
That part was really, really creepy, except for... There's one weird inconsistency on there. Later on, they show the footage of what happened and you see what really happened. He's hypnotized. Mm-hmm. In that case, what we were watching in the movie theater, we wouldn't have seen the same reaction.
Yeah. I mean,
that's the only, and I, it didn't afterwards. I was like, huh, but it didn't, obviously did not lessen my enjoyment at all of this.
You want to know, I was reading some trivia and I was looking at some people commenting about that, that like read some people that like read the initial scripts. It was supposed to be spiders.
I am really glad it wasn't spiders. I would have fucking gotten up and left the theater.
I did like the big worm popping out of his head. That was a cool effect.
That was a really cool effect. And him just tearing his stomach open too was cool. Mm-hmm. And the fact it was done with hypnosis, I thought was pretty brilliant. I don't know if that was actually a thing that was ever done, but it was pretty cool.
Like, I think it would take a little bit longer to get someone hypnotized to that level. I went to the Orange County Fair. It was a huge deal. And they had hypnosis. And I wanted to volunteer and everything. And I got up there and they did the thing. And I was super relaxed. I guess I wasn't deep enough. So I was excused. But then one of the first things he did was make people think there was a snake on the stage, like a big anaconda. Oh. And I'm like, thank God I didn't stick around for that.
Well, lucky for you, Jason, anacondas don't want none unless you've got buns, hun.
Oh, I got some buns.
Really, yeah, I never really took a good look at you from behind. Like, Jason, stand up and turn around for us.
There you go. No. that cost extra money. But yeah, the people on stage were like freaking out about it. I would have ran.
So. I mean, Jason's like, it didn't affect me at all. Later on, there's a video of Jason with his shirt off, like dancing with the I don't remember any of that.
I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. I love the acting. I love the aesthetic. I think they really nailed that. I might watch it again and maybe it hit me a little bit better. But again, I liked it a lot. It's definitely one of the best movies I've seen this year. I'm not as over the moon about it. I'm wondering whether if I was sitting at home, if that would have affected me differently. Maybe with a gummy or something.
I actually think it might be, granted, I think the theater is the best place to see a movie, but this is kind of a movie meant for the home screen, because I think, I would like a copy of this on VHS and a CRT TV to watch this on, because it's got that feel to it, so I think it would feel right, like, late night, right? Turn the lights off, put this on, like you're watching the show. I really hope, and someone on our Slack mentioned this, and I really hope that they do a cut of this where it's, you don't see the behind the scenes stuff. It's just the actual show.
Yeah.
That'd be just to see like how much different it looks when you don't see those little behind the scene pieces. Cause one thing too, in the movie we didn't talk about, but Gus's character is the only one the only character that's like, why are we doing this? Let's this is not good. Like, stop right now. And then he, of course, is the first to die.
Now, was there a significance to the skeleton costumed guy? He just
they show him, up, they show him again at the end.
He shows up at the end again, but I couldn't figure out if that was
I want to say something about, just because they did a real big thing at the beginning where when they're interviewing someone, the skeletons is kind of sitting there stoically, but they keep focusing the camera on him a little bit. And they show him again. I think it was more so a red herring, but also because Bohemian Grove, again, people dress in costume. And I think that was kind of what it's an allusion to.
Or was it kind of like his realities are kind of clashing together? There's a lot of like little things that I think I need to watch it again to kind of see what seeds they planted.
Because it's a movie that begs for a home release that way with a commentary. It's like begs for that, and it'll be like, I'm excited. Like, it's where I watch commentary. This is one I want to watch commentary on.
Yeah, I tried. Actually, there was a showing in LA with the directors, but it was sold out by the time I saw it.
Damn, that'd have been cool.
Yeah, but they did a lot of Q&As and stuff.
And I think if you're really interested in the occult, I think it's even like I really like the occult and like reading about it. I don't believe in a lot of it, but I think it's interesting. So I think if you're into that, it hits you a little bit. Hits a little bit differently. And seeing all those little Easter eggs that I mentioned, like, really kind of made me over the moon. So I'm like, that's so cool. Where if you didn't know those things in real life, it's fine. But by knowing them, it makes it that much more enjoyable. Like, even the book, Confessions with the Devil, it's based off of, God, what was that?
The Devil and Miss Jones?
No. The book that was written, Michelle Remembers.
Oh.
Which was basically a psychologist talking. This is from a book from the late 70s, where a psychologist was talking to this girl, Michelle, who they claim was a victim of ritual abuse, except for she didn't know any of this until she was hypnotized by a medium, and they can't prove anything. And other psychologists actually disprove the whole thing. But a book got written about it. The woman who wrote that book made a shit ton of money on it off basically a bunch of lies.
Yeah. No, it's very obvious that the guys who made this and the production team did a lot of research, not into the cult, but also just like late night 70s shows. Get all the aesthetics and everything.
About the share, like nowadays we talk about the TV industry talks about television ratings. Back then it was a share. It was a share of the viewers that were available at the time and how many of them you got or whatever. So even that terminology I thought was really, really cool, and how they kept like bringing it up, like, Jack, we're back in, the phone boards are lighting up, we're back. Yeah. And there's even a part two where Abraxas or Lily tells him, oh, you're going to be famous after tonight. You're going to be just fine, Jack. I was like, ooh.
Yeah, there were lots of little bits that actress did or that were in the script where like the makeup person is doing her. And she's like, oh, thank you, Gabby. And she's like, wait, did I tell you my name? And no one else is like, everyone just kind of ignores the makeup lady.
And you get these little pieces where you see, like, you can't quite tell, is this actually the little girl or is this the demon pretending to be the little girl? Because there are a couple like genuine scenes where she almost comes out of that trance and says something genuine or nice or whatever. And then she almost has like a different tone to her voice when she's trying to be condescending or be facetious or whatever.
Yeah, you fuss from it.
Oh.
We don't talk
about that on the air, Jason.
Yeah. What else? No, I thought, again, David Duchamel, he's got very expressive eyes, kind of puppy dog eyes almost. And
he knocks out of the park on this. Knocks out of the park. Because, again, when you have a production that's kind of this small, you really rely, and he is the main character, and he is forefront on the screen for 95% of the movie. If his performance wasn't as strong as it was, the movie would not have been as good. Nearly as good.
I 100% agree.
You know, there's slasher movies where you can get by off wooden characters that are bad actors, whatever, but this is not a movie that could have gone by with that.
Those just aren't memorable, though.
Correct. Like, this is a movie, even, man, like, this movie, it got under my skin, because I love that occult stuff, and I know enough about it to where I don't think it's real, but if it was, this is kind of how what would happen. And it's still, you know, it's been 2 days since I saw it Tuesday. And we're recording this on Thursday, and it's still, I can't stop thinking about it. And I might go see it again this weekend.
Nice. All right. Any
Regal Unlimited, folks? $21 a month. You use it twice, it pays for itself. It really does. I'll be honest.
Yeah. All right. Any other final thoughts?
No, except for, again, I think this will be the most, if there's a horror movie that comes out this year that tops this for me, then that means it's an amazing year for horror.
Yeah, no, it's a great time at the theater. I think it'll be a great time at home when it comes on Shudder. It's going to make a lot of lists, so I think everyone should go check it out.
Definitely.
All right. Well, we thank everyone for listening to this little mini review. Mondo, you want to say goodbye?
We love it. Well, this is for Patreon anyways, right? Are we doing main feed? Oh, main feed gets this too. Okay. So join our Patreon. If you like hearing more stuff like this, or you like Treehouse of Horror reviews, smash that like and subscribe button. That felt dirty. Just click on it. Just give it a little clicky click. Little clicky click on those buttons. It really helps us out. And if you want to help us out more than anything, leave us a rating review on Spotify, on iTunes. That's how we get more, get the word out there if you like what we're doing. If you don't like what we're doing, just keep it to yourself. Don't say it. Don't tell anybody.
And what's our TikTok handle?
Dads from the Crypt Talk. Which I still don't know how to spell. So I don't really use TikTok, so I don't think I'm even following us right now.
It's so stupid, but it makes me laugh.
Oh, I think it's actually brilliant. We should actually use that. All the kids use that nowadays for views and likes.
We actually have a decent TikTok following, believe it or not. I just put really stupid shit on there and somehow put
on it. So they all start checking it out and following us.
Yeah. All right. We thank you everyone for listening to
Dads from the Crypt.
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch, but be careful what you axe for, you may get it.